Started now. Let me just introduce this series to you. The title is The Gospel in Life. The person who will be doing the speaking is Pastor Tim Keller. For those of you who have never heard of him, he is the pastor of a PCA church in Manhattan, New York City. For those of you who have never been to New York City, never spent much time there, from a human perspective, and I've never really been to Los Angeles or Chicago for any length of time, but in my estimation, from a human perspective, New York City is one of the toughest places to evangelize and to plant a sound church. The New Yorkers are kind of, by upbringing, suspicious people. Whenever we did do evangelism there or handed out tracts or books, you know, you'll see them look at the back, they'll wonder what the catch is. You know, it's never, you know, a total trust thing. Pastor Keller's been there from 1989 to the present time. And he's been able, by the grace of God and with God's help, to plant a PCA church in downtown Manhattan. And the membership now, I think, of the combined six churches that now exist are about 5,000 people or more, which is quite a thing. You can actually Google the website of the congregation. It's Redeemer PCA or Redeemer Manhattan, and you can, there's a lot of useful things on there. And it's just amazing to me that a confessionally sound church that takes their confession seriously can actually succeed in a big city, inner city setting. These presentations are very short. They're 10 minutes in length. We'll have 8 of them over the next 8 weeks. We've looked through them. We're going through them for a second time as a family, just to kind of preview them, see what they're like. They're deceptively simple. You may get to the end of the 10 minutes and say, now, is that new? Or did I learn anything? But if you listen very closely, I think we'll learn a lot. He takes the gospel, he brings it into some very surprising settings and some very surprising ways. The first one is called The Gospel and the City. You may think, well, a presentation on the gospel, what does it have to do with cities? But he'll bring us through where he's coming from, how the gospel impacts our lives, and how we connect with people around us, and the people connect with us. So what I aim to do, because we found that listening to it once wasn't the total package, that when we heard it a second time, we got the most out of it. I'm going to play the 10 minutes. We're going to go through a couple of questions and a study guide together. And then I'm going to play it again at the end of our time together. And I think when you hear it the second time, after we've discussed some things, it might actually mean more to you. So, you know what? Let's pray like we do with all our other sessions before we start. Just to give you a sense of what the subjects will be. Okay, do I hit one of these other things?
Yeah.
Huh. So, city, the gospel and life. He's going to talk about city, heart, idolatry, community, witness, work, justice, and then city and eternity.
Exiles have to work out their relationship with this new place where they find themselves, living among people whose values and beliefs and practices differ vastly from their own. The Babylonians want the exiles to move into the city and lose their spiritual identity. That was the whole reason they took them to Babylon. They expected that after a couple of generations, the children and grandchildren of the Israelites would assimilate. And they would lose their identity as a distinct people. So, the Babylonians were saying, in effect, come on into the city, take on its values, love it, be assimilated by it. The Israelite false prophets, like Hananiah, however, had a different viewpoint. They counseled that if the exiles wanted to keep their spiritual identity, they needed to stay out of the city. They needed to stay on the Kabar Canal or the other places that the first exiles settled, and they were to have minimal contact with the hated metropolis of Babylon. So the prophets were saying, in effect, stay out of the city, exploit it, use it, disdain it. So the Babylonians say, move into the city and lose your spiritual identity. The false prophets say, don't move into the city and keep your spiritual identity. But God, through Jeremiah, tells the exiles in the most startling way, move into the city and keep your spiritual identity. In fact, God calls them to move in and serve the city out of their distinct spiritual identity. God says to the exiles in Jeremiah 29:7, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. This must have been utterly astonishing to the exiles. Here's God calling the Jewish exiles to serve the common good of the pagan city. Here's God saying that his people's joy and prosperity will be found in seeking the joy and well-being of the pagan city in which they are in exile. So he says to them, settle down, build houses, marry and have sons and daughters and increase in number there, and seek the shalom, the peace and prosperity of the city, and to pray to the Lord for it. Now, Jeremiah does say that there will be judgment if the city of Babylon does not repent. So the Israelites should not close their eyes to its wickedness. They're not to compromise with pagan values. They are to serve and love their new place of residence, rather than resemble it or remove themselves from it. This is quite a balance. It's a call to lift up the welfare of the places in which we live and to bring them joy by living out lives of love and service there. It means to show in words and deeds that we want to serve our neighborhoods in every way and to do it so the people around us see our spirit and our motive. And yet, we must do it without losing our spiritual identity or our distinctiveness. It's a radical idea. God's people should work for the good of those who are not living in a right relationship to God. That, however, is exactly what he told the Israelites, and it's in accord with what Jesus said was the second greatest commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. And it certainly fits in with John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave. Throughout the Bible, repeatedly, we see God's concern for cities and the people within them, both for those inhabited by his people, like Jerusalem, and those that were not, such as Nineveh or Babylon. So if God is just as concerned about cities now as he was then, we should be concerned too. God calls us to serve in whatever place we are, but cities have unique opportunities to do so because the way in which they're designed and how they function. It's very important to remember that the idea of the city is not an accident or a human invention. God shows us in the Bible that he designed cities with certain purposes. Cities were designed to be places of refuge and safety. The density of population in the city wall provided protection. So cities were the best places for women and children, for minorities, immigrants, and other people without power in the social order. Also, cities were places of justice. Outside, it was every man for himself, where conflicts were resolved with sheer power. But in cities, there was jurisprudence. Third, cities were to be places of culture development. The city market square was where the most numerous and diverse commercial, social, political, and cultural connections could be made. And from these interactions, new cultural products and movements were forged and flow out to the sphere of influence around the city. Fourth, Cities were designed to be places of spiritual seeking and finding. So the city's highest tower, whether it was a castle, a minaret, a cathedral, or an office skyscraper, always indicates a city's faith, what most of the people are looking to for significance. Today, the city is still a place of refuge for minorities and the place where laws are made and enforced. Cities are still the main place that culture is forged and disseminated. As the city goes, so goes the arts, scholarship, communication, philosophy, and commerce, and so on. Change develops and flows out from cities. The city is also still a place of great spiritual seeking and finding. But sin has broken cities so that none of the original purposes are being properly realized. For the Bible denounces cities as places of violence, injustice, pride, and unbelief. The density and diversity of the city under sin create a place of racism, classism, and violence. Also, the city becomes a place to escape from God and His law. While the city still produces culture, it does so in a way that glorifies human beings and not God. The cultural development power of the city under sin creates a place of pride, arrogance, excess, overwork, and exhaustion. Moreover, many people go to the city to create their own moralities, and therefore, the spiritual restlessness of the city under sin makes it a place of cults and false belief. If we are to seek the peace and prosperity of our cities, and by city I mean any place of density and diversity and cultural energy, then we need to think about how to restore the city's original purposes. So firstly, we serve and love those who need help and protection. We seek to serve the needs of others no matter what their race or class, instead of seeking to use others to meet our own needs. Second, we need to do justice. We need to bring God's love, peace, and justice to bear on a broken world. Third, we create and cultivate culture. With all that involves in terms of creativity and relationships and excellence and how we live out our faith in the workplace. Fourth, we need to be a people who encourage others to seek spiritually but hold out Christ as the ultimate satisfaction of that quest. God cares about people, about their suffering and pain, their heartaches and trials, the oppression they experience, the injustice they bear. God is a God of compassion. He wants us to enjoy Him and so experience His love, joy, and peace. The logic is simple then. God loves people, and so He cares about cities. As He says to Jonah about one such city, Nineveh has more than 120,000 people. Should I not be concerned about that great city? And if God cares about cities and the masses of people who live there, so should we. Let me suggest that you start to work out the gospel in the city in order to work the gospel into your own heart. In the city, you're going to find people that appear spiritually hopeless. You're going to find people of no religion, of people of other religions, people with deeply non-Christian lifestyles, and you're going to discover that many of them are kinder, deeper, and wiser than you. You will also find that many of the poor and the broken are much more open to the gospel of grace and more dedicated to its practical outworking than you are. And all of this is going to force you to either finally believe that the gospel is of sheer grace or you'll give it up altogether. You should eventually come to see that you need the city to spiritually grow, maybe more than the city needs you. Are you living for the city? Or are you just using it for fun or career advancement? Are you praying for the city? Are you rooting for it? Do you have the same attitude toward the city that God wanted the exiles to have toward Babylon? Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you. Pray to the Lord for it. For if it prospers, you too will prosper.
having grown up next, well, having been born in a very large city, having grown up in the midst of cities, I have to say that once the Lord opened my eyes, the city became a very scary place. A place where you did what you had to do and you got out of it. I found that this first video particularly was very convicting to me. You know, cities were where those people live. People not like us. But when you hear about how the Lord commanded the people of Israel, who were there because of judgment in Babylon, commanded to not only pray for the city, but to impact the city, to live among them not as they live, but as godly people live, and yet for their good. I just found that very convicting. And you know, you may think, well, this is social stuff. Don't worry, in sessions 2 and 3, he's going to come steps and steps closer to our own hearts, to what makes us tick. But he starts by simply saying, you know, what is our attitude, what is our relationship to the people around us in these population centers called cities. So let me just start by, we'll just discuss these questions together. If you could just grab the Bible in front of you in the pew, that would probably be helpful. Let me just make sure I got the right questions here. Here we are. First of all, this is kind of a basic question. Was there anything from the DVD that was new to you or affected you? Did you hear anything that raised questions in your mind? That's a simple one. What?
I think that, just like you, we as Christians tend to, in many ways, disdain the city because there's a great deal of sin that goes on there, and it's a temptation to sin, but to view it as a possibility for growth in outreach and in service is something that we look at right now.
Very good. The picture that came to my mind as he was talking, you picture Nineveh, right? 325,000 people, I forget how many, I think it's at 125 on the video, I thought it was more than that, but at any rate, there sits Jonah, the prophet of God, waiting for fire to come down from heaven to wipe those people out. And he was very disappointed it didn't happen. That says something to us. And then God comes along, and it's the very end of the book. He says, all those people, and the cattle, he even says, should I not care for those people? And the book ends. You know, the obvious lesson is, you're my servant. Don't you care? Now, Nineveh wasn't exactly Harrison, Arkansas. You know, Nineveh was the capital city of the very people who would take the 10 tribes into captivity, and they were ruthless. They were renowned for their cruelty and oppression. And God says, I care for that people. And you know the rest of the story, right? How that people repented at the preaching of Jonah. And so, you know, maybe your expectations for cities aren't quite up to God's level yet. Now, anybody else have comments about that? The question was, anything new to you had an effect on you, or did you, were any questions raised in your mind? Michael? I think he said the city, you may need the city more than the city needs you. I think in our setting, we can take city as wherever we go to find stores, to find people, to find opportunities. So be it Yellville, you know, be it Springfield, doesn't have to be a big city, can be the local place where people come to meet, to socialize, to shop, to work. any place where there's things happening in a group setting. Anyone else? Actually, I'm going to venture a guess. We're pretty safe in Harrison.
But I still don't consider it a place of safety.
Yeah. Well, you notice, though, he said that sin has changed all of that. I mean, in the Old Testament, we were talking about this, Pastor Niels and I, over car ride or whatever, but in the Old Testament, you had walled cities. And the cities of refuge, if you murdered somebody by accident, killed somebody by accident, you ran there. If you were outside the city, you were not safe, because the avenger of blood finds you, you get killed, and it was legal. All that's changed, right? Now we have centers full of fallen sinners who feed on each other's wickedness. So it's true what your observation is. His point is, okay, what do we do as believers to bring, to address the original purpose cities had? How can the gospel make cities places of refuge again? That's an intriguing thought, at least to me. Good observation, though.
The idea of actually being a servant to those people that you would think that, I'm trying to think of the right words, but the people that you normally would just think that you are bringing them the gospel and everything, but to actually serve them with it and try to help them, it's kind of like when Christ was saying about loving your enemies, and what reward is it to love those that do good to you? And I just read that the other day and was thinking about that, and that all really goes together a lot, because to really come and serve, like in the people of Harrison that may not want, you may not care anything about what you're bringing, but to still show them the same love and compassion that we would somebody embracing us with open arms.
As you're speaking, the picture that comes to my mind, right? Days before he's about to be crucified, Jesus, looking down on the city from the Mount of Olives, weeps. And he weeps because he says, if you had only known the peace that you could have had. I'm just paraphrasing, right? But it was hid from your eyes. And then he says, you're going to be leveled to the ground. Now here's a city that's about to reject him and the gospel and be destroyed because of it. And he's weeping over it. That's the picture I get. You know, are we weeping over a city like this that's so dysfunctional, that has so many issues? Cities like New York, like Chicago, that maybe we've written off as hopeless for the gospel. If that's true, we may as well just close shop, because we're all hopeless by nature. So I think cities are just a magnified version of me, the lost sinner, who can only be restored by grace.
That was his point. Saying, you need to see, you will see yourself in that city. Mm. You will really find out what grace is when you see people who are atheistic, who are in many ways kinder than you are, or people that will give you the last piece of clothing off their back.
And they do. That's one of the greatest myths about cities. It's true that some of the most horrendous sins happen in cities. Some of the most remarkable compassion happens in the midst of this cauldron of iniquity. And it never ceases to amaze me.
They were were to the glory of God in where they were at and with their neighbor and everything else. And I just think I understand New York City is a hard thing to maybe for us to comprehend, but as we were mentioned before, I think by Brian, that we are praying that God would give us this city. And the other thing I think that ties into that is that when you go into the city, we look at it sometimes from the perspective of we go into the city to redeem the city. But I would suggest to you that if you go into the city and you speak to people and you are able to witness to them and everything else, you will walk from that city on air because of the grace of God and you going in there and taking the gospel, you will grow exponentially as much as more as maybe the individuals that you maybe are even talking to. It is as much for us as it is, you know, for them. It's much for us to go to the city of Harrison, the city of Yoda, whatever, that we might grow in the grace of Christ as for the gospel that we're taking. And
Definitely. Okay, let me just go to question number two. A certain pastor from India writes in his book, Christ and Cities, cities should not be seen as monsters, but communities of people in need. How do you view the place in which you live? What emotions come to mind? And what do you value about it? So the questions are, how do you view the place in which you live? What emotions come to mind about it? And what do you value about the place you live? Have you never thought about it? It's just a place to live. I know for me that the reason we chose living in town was, I'm ashamed to say it, convenience. We knew we'd have a lot to do. We have busy lives. We've had busy lives as long as we can remember. So the thought of having a store within 5 minutes and a gas station within 5 minutes and a bank within 5 minutes was very appealing to us. We'd kind of love to live in the country aesthetically. You know, this beautiful countryside here, you know, growing your own vegetables and stuff like that is certainly attractive. But there's just so many hours in a day, so many minutes in an hour, and so you have to make a choice. But to my shame, I can't say I give a single thought to moving into the city to redeem the city. It was a totally selfish, utilitarian decision. And that's shame on me. I have a hunch, because of the quietness of the answers to this question, that maybe a lot of us chose where we're living kind of for reasons of our own benefit and not really thinking redemptively. But wouldn't it be marvelous in 3 or 4 years or sooner to say, well, now that we have Harrison and Leslie and Yellville for the gospel, where next, Lord? Question three. In the DVD we heard, in the city you're going to find people that appear spiritually hopeless. You're going to find people of no religion, people of other religions, and people with deeply non-Christian lifestyles. And you're going to discover that many of them are kinder, deeper, and wiser than you. You will also find that many of the poor and the broken are much more open to the gospel of grace and more dedicated to its practical outworking than you are. Has this been the case in your own experience or in the experience of people you know? Share examples. Sure. I'm not going to read the quote again, but the question is, how, you know, has this been the case that you found such people? Has this been the case in your own experience or in the experience of people you know? And cite examples.
I've seen it in cities. I work in a lot of them. I'm not scared of the city or anything like that, but it seems that a person can almost lose their identity in the city. They be vacant. They don't have to make a point if they're a little angry. But in the rural setting, you have the exact same thing. this. You know, it's compacted, it's more condensed in the city. So, you know, if you see five of them, where out in the country, you maybe see one.
So I think what you're saying is you can be lost in the crowd,
yeah,
or you can be lost in the woods.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, it's a very interesting thing you're saying, because I've actually met people who purposely will go to a larger church to disappear. I can just be there, I can leave, and nobody really has to know me. Whereas a church like this is kind of threatening to them, because all of a sudden I have to actually talk to you. I have to have a relationship with you. Jan and I were talking, you know, the one thing we don't agree with Redeemer is we don't ever want to see a church of 5,000 people, because then you can get lost there. And as a pastor, you'd become a CEO. You wouldn't be a pastor anymore. You just put out fires and, you know, direct committees and stuff. But so we'd always want to keep a sense of community. And I think you've heard me say, and I want to just say that again here to plant another seed. One of the reasons I'm kind of now even more convicted than ever that we need to get the gospel to the places where you live is because of community. You can't import community. He's going to have a whole session on what community is and what it feels like. But I would suggest to you, you know, we meet here together from various places. We create opportunities to be together. But we don't work in the same places. We don't worship. I mean, we don't go to the same stores. We don't walk the same streets. We are very spread apart. But as we bring the gospel in our own communities to the people we know and work with and see, it's got a very different flavor to it. So I think sometimes we need to put financial stuff in God's hands and start thinking, okay, how was the gospel spread in the New Testament? It seems to me it went from a community to a community, and then within that community, God raised up people for himself. So that should be the vision that we're aiming for, not how can we create a community from vastly different population centers in one place. That's going to be hard to maintain. It's often said today that Christians have little impact on the world around them. Is that a correct assessment? And why is it so? And what prevents us from becoming more engaged in the world around us? So, Christians, it is said, have little impact on the world around them. Is that correct? Why, if it is correct? Then what would prevent us from becoming more engaged in the world around us?
I think it is correct, unfortunately, again. But I think that part of it is because so many of us just want to get by and just be that person that goes and hides in church and doesn't really, we just kind of exist. And there's a lot of us that do that. And that tends to be our nature.
Mm.
It's easier that way.
Okay. Anything else? Homer?
Well, I think there's not a big enough difference between the church and the world. It's a major issue.
Okay. Can you give specifics? What ways is the church too much like the world?
Well, we like the things of the world instead of the things of God.
Mm-hmm.
We pursue the things of the world instead of the things of God. We're not changed by the renewing of our minds. We're pursuing worldly pleasures too much the same.
Mm.
We tend to be in church for selfish reasons, typically.
Such as?
For ourselves. We're here because we want to get to heaven, not because we want to take and spread the gospel or take and grow the kingdom or with the servant mindset that we need to have for other people.
Just taking those comments and adding my own conviction. If you have a selfish pastor and selfish people, can this church grow? Why on earth would God want to multiply that? But if we really are here to be equipped to bring redemption to those around us, well, now we're doing what God's interested in doing. And that's when a church will grow, because that's his program. But if we, you know, and I, for years, I would come to church to be blessed. I want to be fed. Well, that's fine, but for what? To what purpose? So I can go out and take that and hold on to it and enjoy it for myself, you know, in the napkin, and give it back at the end of the time and hope that he's satisfied with that.
Something that, I think it was Tim Keller or something that church put out that you had sent out to us, was you made the comment about how so many people come to church to see what I can get out of church, more than coming there to see how they can serve and bless the people that are there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anything else on that? One of the convicting statements, he said it was the false prophets who said, go into the city to do your business, but, you know, hole up so you don't get contaminated. Well, that doesn't do very much for the kingdom. If every Christian just gets behind their walls, that's the end of evangelism. You know, waiting, you know, get in our homes and waiting for the professionals. You know, the pastors, the evangelists, the missionaries to do that. Nothing much comes of it.
Okay, let me ask you something in regard to this. I couldn't find the passage to memorize the location. There is a verse that's often quoted by people that say you need to get out of the city, and that is, come out from among them, be separate, touch on the enemy of pain, and so on. How would you and Jan comment on that in regard to this?
Pastor Niels, what do you say?
It's not come out of the city. That's not what it says. Like, come out from among them. The world as opposed to God's people. Right? Now, I don't know the context of it. I
think it's like,
it's in several places. In Corinthians, it
says, if the call of God, you come out of that.
To be separate.
But the point is, does not our Lord say, take them not out of the world, but keep them from the evil? Right?
So your comment would be that they have taken this spiritual command to spiritually come out of that one, not have the city in you.
Right.
And they've turned it into a physical command to get out of the city and live in the country.
The point is, be a distinct people. Don't be contaminated by your surroundings. But how can you leaven your surroundings if you're not there? How can you be salt? How can you be light? How can you do anything that God commands us to do in that way if you're not there? You can't export godliness into a vacuum. So I think that's the way that would be answered, yeah.
I think we need to be cautious here too. Keller is not saying everybody move out of the country into the city. I'm not saying that either.
But you're welcome to if you want. I mean, we could use some neighbors.
We could use some vegetables too. That's
true. That's very true.
That's not the point. The point is, wherever the Lord has placed you, consider that a city. your closest neighbors, whoever they are, within a 5-mile radius or whatever, that's your city. That's where you live. And all of us are called to be that evangelist. Whether at your home or at your workplace. I heard a guy on the radio say, no, a Christian plumber is an ordained plumber.
He may not be licensed, but he's ordained.
He's ordained, right? He's to be God's voice and God's presence and God's hands and God's feet to the people he serves.
Well, just imagine a community where the postman, the carpenter, the plumber, the farmer, where all of them are godly. You'd have reflections of God everywhere you turned. Well, that would be way more powerful than what any of us could do, you know. No.
And we have found that as the trades that, hey, you have access to these people's houses. You'll sometimes sit around the table with them. Mm-hmm.
I think our time is almost up. Let me squeeze in one more question. The Hebrew word translated prosper means to be healthy, to increase, to have things go well. It means growth in all its dimensions. What types of growth within the Christian community can prosper the places in which we live? So what types of growth within the Christian community can prosper the places in which we live? And then there's a follow-up. In what specific ways can you and your group seek to serve and to love your place of residence rather than resemble it or remove yourself from it? So let's take what we just discussed and put it into practical terms. What can we do now based on what we've been talking about? How can we seek to serve and to love our place of residence rather than either resemble it on the one hand or remove ourselves from it on the other? Okay. So there's certainly a what the world calls a humanitarian, tangible, practical outworking of the gospel, right? Anything else?
One of the things that I've noticed around here just with other churches is, and I think even like Leslie, we've seen with ourselves, is that when you have Bible studies and stuff like that, people are comfortable coming to those, though they may not be comfortable coming to the church at first. But I think specifically there's a program called several churches have had around here. Its purpose is to people to recommit themselves. And I'm not saying that I'm really agreeing with this, but the idea that I've noticed is in being part of those things before, when First Baptist had it, people from all different kinds of churches came to it. And it was interesting that that would happen. And one thing that's really been convicting to me is if we had a weekday Bible study, or like the thing that they have in Grand Rapids, which, what is it called,
HHOM?
Yeah, that thing. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. Another one that I've seen work really well is when you do meals and you have like a soup line type thing or whatever, mm-hmm. and you say, you can eat, but we're going to preach the gospel. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, again, we're a small church and we have to take on what we can. But those are things that if we try to work towards that. I just drove past Yelda yesterday and found out at 7 o'clock every Saturday night they had music. We could be there witnessing. Mm-hmm.
Or we could be there with music.
Right, so with music, whatever it may be.
You and John had a great idea, which I hope we can follow up in our communities. A Boy Scout group. When we were in New Jersey, the Christian school our children attended formed a Boy Scout group. Some of the men of the congregation that ran that church, that school, they were able to run it distinctively Christian. It was open in prayer. There were scripture lessons throughout. There was no problem with the Boy Scouts of America doing it that way. So you had godly mentors. And we had children from everywhere, cities and different races and whatever, all coming, some Christian, some not. It was a marvelous opportunity for men to mentor boys who never knew what a father was. Simple. Okay. No, right.
And I was thinking, you know, if we could formulate something that was a biblical celebration,
yeah.
Or something like that, you know, as far as that when you're talking about the Boy Scouts, I would implore the men in here, especially, I have no ability as far as, you know, how to do those things, you know, how to build this or build that. That is not my MO. But the men in here, and I see them, I'm looking at them right now, that know how to do that stuff and are good at it, the things that we can facilitate in something like that, I think will be huge, because if there's one thing that people see that is attractive from the world, when they come into a church and they see godly kids, they see kids that respect their parents, that honor and obey authority, that is attractive.
That's why the Mormon church is flourishing. It's not because of their doctrine. It's because people see stability, people see families taking care of each other. It's like, hey, we don't have that in the world. Let's go there. Okay, we do need to finish. Thank you very much. The best is yet to come. This gets way better, but I think this gets us off into a little bit different mindset than maybe what we're used to. So let's pray, and then we'll go to eat.